think for any couple, if you don't have an understanding of one another's financial profile, and what does that mean, kind of the debt burden, the income, the budgeting, it's imperative that you have those conversations.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and yes, she's back, Jess.
What's up?
In this series, my fiance, Jess, and I have been sitting down with some of our favorite couples to unpack what hope looks like in each season of the relationship journey. Guests have shared their personal stories and marital advice, and we're not stopping today with some of my friends. I'm so excited to continue this series. It's going to be incredible. Well, you might know our guest. He's the host of the brand new podcast, Trading Secrets, and recently got engaged to his amazing fiance, who I know, Caitlin. Yes, this is Jason Tardick.
We're going to be digging into how to navigate finances when it comes to relationships. And let me tell you, Jason shares some seriously valuable advice. So let's jump into it on this special episode of Hope Still Wins in Relationships. Here's Jason Tardick.
Jason, thanks for joining us, buddy.
How are you guys?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. There's a lot of travel the last couple months, but it's good to be back in Nashville. You guys are in Denver, right?
Yeah. I was going to say you're back in my homeland. I'm jealous.
Now, you're born and raised here, right?
I was raised there. I was born in Atlanta, but I call Nashville home. Yeah,
so
I miss it.
We got to spend some time together in Memphis, and then you were just at the Ryder Cup. You're living the dream right now. Life is good. But you're busy because you're not just like a traveler by trade. You also have a lot going on, and that's why we have you on the podcast today. Because I don't know, just get to know you better in my life, following your work. You were the perfect person to come on, talk relationships, but also then talk finances within relationships during our relationship series. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I think Ben's trying to give me a little hint with this one.
Yeah, I'm really trying to teach her a thing or two.
I love it.
Yeah, and I, you know, sometimes it's just easier to have somebody else teach than your spouse. So let's dive in here. Jason, you're engaged, happily engaged to Caitlin. You know, how has the engagement process been for the two of you? We're ending our engagement process in about a month. We're going to be married. For you and Caitlin, how has this gone?
Yeah, so I was just saying this yesterday. That first week after we got engaged, it was probably like the highest point of my entire life. Like it was we were out in Cabo or with their family. No, like we kind of made a commitment to each other. We're going to put our phones down. And it was like just pure bliss. And then you get back to real life and you're like, ah, shit. And it has just been such a busy summer. That we need to get back. I need Caitlin back because she was gone for 2.5 months for filming The Bachelorette. And it's been just a crazy, crazy year of work for us. So the engagement has been amazing. That high of that week after was just unbelievable. And now, just like anything, real life hits and we're moving 100 miles an hour in all different directions. And it is so good. She got back like 2 weeks ago. It's so good to have her back home and be in the same place for a little bit.
Yeah, how was it going from being engaged and together for a while and then all of a sudden you're apart? Was that like hard for you guys? Was it really, really sad? Or did you just know you had to do what you had to do?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of all those. I think anyone who's telling you like being away from your significant other isn't easy should probably like maybe reconsider that relationship, right? Like it's a challenging thing to have so many moving parts through that. But it's so you of course miss her to death when she's gone, excited when she's back. You know, one of the big things is too, like finding ways that our whole family could be together. So it worked out well when she was in Minnesota. We could drive up with the dogs and have a nice week together. So it made me think though about any of these producers, Ben, you think about some of these producers, even Chris, like how they were able to maintain, like Caitlin's only doing one season. Now they went back to back, but how could they maintain like the life? How do you do that if you're gone literally 10 months of the 12 months? She was only gone for two and a half.
Yeah. Well, and you know, obviously she's had a huge year. When you've been by her side, Dance with the Stars, and then obviously the mentorship, and then the hosting role, which I still don't understand what's different, but it's something we'll find out. It's interesting. We've had a bunch of different kind of couples and singles on this podcast so far during this series. And one of the things that's getting written into us a lot is, how do you navigate really difficult conversations? So you're a supporter of Caitlin. You've always been a supporter of Caitlin. She's a supporter of you. But obviously that request that, hey, Jason, I'm going to leave for 5 months this year, that's a big conversation no matter how supportive you are. How do you two enter into those together?
I think it's understanding like what is the principal motivation behind it all. And I know, and she knows, based on the conversations we've had, this is a means of getting her to a place where hopefully she could retire early. Like, that's what her goal in life is to like retire at a very, very early age. So then she could do all the things she dreams to do, from, you know, being a mother and, you know, doing all the things that she would like to do personally. For me, that's not a dream of mine. Like, I don't dream to retire early. Mostly, and maybe it's sick, I get so much fulfillment from work. It's a means to an end. And so I understand that her being gone for those 2.5 months, these are opportunities that are accelerating her career and her dream and goal of retiring early. And I'm here to support that, as much as it could be, like, candidly, it could be a pain. It could be brutal. If you think about the last year, it's been, we just talked about this recently. You know, she had her show re-air. Jessica, how nice was it to see Caitlin and Ben hit it off?
I tried not to.
You get so numb to the Jessica, you're like, whatever, Ben's my boy, who cares? Yeah. But she had her season re-air right after COVID. From that, she went to Dancing with the Stars, like you said. Dancing with the Stars, the mentorship, the host, to back-to-back season. She got her tour coming up in November. So it has been mayhem this last year. And hopefully light at the end of the tunnel helps us get to the point that she wants to be.
You are a good partner, and you always have been. You have a lot going on yourself, and I want to kind of now dig into some of this stuff that couples really don't talk about a lot. In fact, you could probably give me this statistic here. I think I'm just spitballing, but I think it's finances are the number two reason why people get divorced. Is that it, or is it number one?
My understanding, it's number one. You know, 80% of all statistics are bullshit anyway, but my understanding is the number one reason is actually money.
That's why it's so important during our relationship series to do this. Jessica kind of prefaced before we started. She goes, hey, Jason, just let you know, I might ask some dumb questions. And you said, that's great. And there's really not a dumb question here, because you told me on the phone the other day, Jason, that you did a poll maybe last year about how many people knew what the NASDAQ stood for and what was involved within it. And then you said, how many people didn't have a clue?
Yeah, so it was an S&P 500, and it was right when the March crisis was happening with COVID, and every headline was, you know, S&P 500 getting smoked. So I was just like, I'm curious what, like, the following, like, is aware of that. I put it out there. Hey, could you be honest? Could you describe to me what the S&P 500 is? We see it everywhere in a few sentences. And I was blown away. It was 91%, and I looked at them. It was about 250,000 views on this story. 91%. Said they couldn't do it. And my finance buddies were like, you got to be f-ing kidding me. Like, what's happening in this world? And then I go to someone like Caitlin, who we just talked about, has had a lot of success with her entrepreneurship and business. And she's like, yeah, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. So it was eye-opening.
Yeah, I get like a news email every morning, and there's a little chart that says all the initials, and then if they're green or red, I don't know what it means, but I feel smart looking at it.
Yeah, it's what's interesting is these are the things that make our world kind of go round. If we just said money is the number one leading cause of divorces, number two, we'll have to fact check it. But it's fascinating that in our system, in our curriculum, we don't have any lessons, we don't have any mandatory certificates or classes to be taken for us to understand some of these basic things. And I think what you're doing here, Ben and Jessica, the fact you were so open with your question is exactly what we need to do. Like, we need to kind of rattle each other up a little bit and be like, no question's a dumb question. Money is probably the most important asset we'll ever see in our lifetime. Let's just talk about it, understand it a little bit more.
Well, that's why you've also done a couple things to kind of fill that gap. And I want to mention those now. You have a podcast, Trading Secrets. If you don't mind just explaining what this podcast is, kind of what's the motivation behind it?
Yeah, so the motivation behind Trading Secrets is that everyone has a story to success, and what you'll find, I think, or what I have found, I've had the opportunity on this podcast to interview guys like Rob Dyrdek, sharks from Shark Tank. I just interviewed a multi-billionaire, Mark Lurie, and you start to hear their stories to success. And it's not what we conventionally think is the blueprint, like going to school or born into a big family with money. Usually there are these like crazy detours they've taken and lessons they've learned that you just can't learn in a textbook. And so every guest, what we try and do is rewire their path to success and most importantly, talk about the money. Because my thesis is that when I worked in corporate America for 10 years, we weren't allowed to talk to our colleagues about how much is made and why. My thesis is that that only behooves the people at the top. The more information that we can get from our counterparts who have hit rock bottom and or succeeded, the better we'll all be. And so in these podcast Trading Secrets, we trade the secrets of their life navigation, career navigation, and all the financial navigation, good, bad, and ugly. And it's been eye-opening. It's been an eye-opening experience.
Do you think, so I'm going to call out Jessica because I love her dearly. Do you think humans like Jessica, who self-admittedly say, hey, I don't know a lot about finances. I don't really know what those like letters mean in the bar that goes green and red, but it makes me feel smart. Do you think she could get something out of this?
Yes, I think it is like the 101, the definition of 101 career and financial navigations. Now, I think there's certain episodes for certain people, like when we have a crypto expert on and all he talks about is Bitcoin. Anthony Papliano, he has 96% of his net worth, which is like multi millions of dollars, tied up in Bitcoin. It's a very niche discussion. But, you know, I just had Pinky Cole on, who is the Slutty Vegan. That's the restaurant she owns. What a badass story. Anyone would understand what she did. She opened a business, hit rock bottom, invested a million, lost every dollar, and has completely turned her life and business model around, and she's murdering it. So I think from A to Z, 101 to a little bit more niche and sophisticated, we have an episode for someone.
That's special.
Done. Subscribed.
And then
get in there.
And then before we really dive into the relational finance questions here, I also want to mention Restart. Which has been a response to multiple things that you've noticed in kind of the world with finances, the lack of education, the lack of easily consumable information, I think would be a way that I would explain your brand. You could probably explain a lot better than me. But for anybody out there listening, as we get started here, what is Restart and why would people want to like stay into that?
Yeah, so Restart, we have an Instagram page. It's Restart_reset. The whole premise of it is to do exactly kind of what Jessica's asking for, is digestible information that we need to know every day, like the shit we got to know going into our day as it relates to markets and who's hiring and who's firing and the information that's pertinent. We don't get into the weeds and talk about technical analysis of a stock and things that are going to go over your head. We break down the simplicity of the must-knows. And through that group, we have a network membership that people can join, and we have a day trader in there that will give you advice. We have investment bankers that will give you advice, tax professionals, and it's a community that if you're looking to just center yourself a little bit about finance and career management, it's the place to be. And I'd say just start by following us, and from there you'll see the different offerings we have, and if you think something makes sense, you just let us know and we'll make it work.
Let's dive in here. I'm going to start with this one. Jessica, fill the gaps where you have any questions, whatever comes to your mind, clarity, clarifying questions is probably going to help us.
All right.
I was prepping and listening to a podcast where Caitlin, your fiance, Jason, admitted, and I don't think she'd be upset for me saying this, that you've really helped her organize her finances, right? It's not a secret to the world that Caitlin has been very successful, done very well in the last few years of her life, and accrued a fairly large wealth for herself. But it really was you that kind of stepped in and helped her understand exactly what was going on. And I think that's where I want to start. How in the world do you even enter into those conversations with your fiance about finances? As we've mentioned before, finances are a huge issue in relationships. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's interesting about Caitlin and I is, in you know, obviously I've been in corporate finance, I have my MBA, so I've always talked money with whether it's clients or people in my life. And one of the things my grandfather did at 16 is he sat down with me and opened up his entire portfolio. He told me every penny he has and what he invests in. And his whole story was that he had a financial advisor, always told him when to buy, never told him when to sell. And he took a monster fee to get all of his money out and manage it himself. And so I've always been comfortable with the conversation. And Caitlin and I, from like the minute we started dating, we just had those conversations. Like, what do we do? How much is made? You know, how do you manage your money, et cetera? So these aren't easy conversations to have. And I think we had it from an early standpoint. And I'd be like, well, how are you organizing, you know, your accounts receivable? And Caitlin's like, what's an account receivable? You know, the money that's owed to you. How past due is it? How are you managing your quarterly taxes? So it obviously helps that that's my background. But I think for any couple, if you don't have an understanding of one another's financial profile, and what does that mean, kind of the debt burden, the income, the budgeting, it's imperative that you have those conversations. You have to open the discussions. And what I say is, like, crack open the vault with your significant other, because especially early on, every individual when you're dating, you look for certain characteristics in someone, some certain personality traits, something that like defines the person's character. And I'm not saying financial habits or health define it, but it also can lead to preventing massive, massive issues down the road.
So on the opposite end, what if you're someone and you're entering into a relationship and you have so much debt and you're trying to tell that person, you know, it's going to take me 30 years to pay off these student loans or X, Y, and Z. How would you approach that situation? And then as the person on the receiving end, like, would you suggest like volunteering to help them like come up with a payment plan, or is that like on their own? I don't know. I feel like that's something important too.
It's so important, because you got 45 million Americans right now that are carrying $1.6 trillion of student debt. So if you have student debt or you have any debt and you're listening to this, like, you are not alone. In fact, you have a lot of people side by side in the same position as you. I think the number one rule everyone has to agree to, whether it's a relationship or even a friendship and you want to have these discussions, is you cannot weaponize and you cannot utilize that information as leverage. I think we see it so many times. Oh, well, I make more money than you, or I pay for this. And then it becomes a leverage tool when you're in fights or something else is happening. It's a trigger point. The rule has to be almost like, if you ever gone to therapy or if you ever talked to a therapist or psychologist, what they'll say is, in any relationship, whether it's a friendship, a business partnership, or a relationship, is that you have to have like emotional security with what you're talking about. You have to feel comfortable saying the things that are on your mind so that those don't continue to sit as trigger points. And I think the same comes with finances. So if you have the courage and open communication to talk about the fact that you're in debt, it is so important that your partner listens to you, understands that, and doesn't use that as like a weapon against you, but also finds solutions to, okay, how do we accelerate your payment on this? What can I do to contribute? What are other things, if it's not paying for rent or the meal or the boat outing or whatever it is, what are things that you can do to kind of add value to our team? Because when you're getting married, if you think about the basics, I hate to do this, it sounds very dry, but if you take out the meat of it, you're entering into a business partnership. That's what you're doing. It's like there's a contractual business partnership. Maybe there's prenup, maybe there's not. Those are all just terms that you're agreeing to. And you have to a certain extent, and God, this sounds so cut dry and vanilla, but you have to like work like business partners. And that's what business partners do.
Yeah.
That's a great point. I've never thought about it that way. But yeah, when you take it all down, and it's probably why finances are such an important piece to every relationship, why it is so controversial, but also so rewarding when the both people are working on the same team together with the mutual understanding. Jason, I want to talk here about a relationship based on one of the questions we got written into us, where one of the partners spends more than what was budgeted for all the time, right? And every time that happens, a conversation needs to be had, and it just gets hostile and it feels hurtful. But one person just seems to want to spend, and they don't seem to understand that money isn't unlimited. How would you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that comes down to, too, is like the account situation. Like, what accounts? Should we have joint accounts? Should we have separate accounts? And I think one of the best ways to keep one another individually responsible is have separate accounts. I don't think overall it's going to be the best for, like, the success of your money management. Like, if people can really operate as one and do it effectively and not outspend one another, they will be able to make more money on their money. They'll be able to make better decisions, but not many people could do that. And I think, just like anything, people have to manage their expenses and have their own separate accounts so that they can budget according to the money that they have coming in. And then I do believe that a joint account makes sense for maybe fun money or dates or certain bills, and you guys each contribute a percentage that you think makes sense. But if you guys have a plan and there's a budgeting plan in place, and there's so many tools and resources we could talk about that people can use to get a plan in place, and someone is not adhering to that, those are some of the same similarities as other issues in relationships. Like, you know, maybe you're having issues because your partner isn't cleaning up after themselves, or maybe you're having issues because they're never on time for things, or they can't make your family events, or whatever issues you think you have in your relationship. If someone isn't kind of adhering to that plan and doing it over and over, it is something that has to be brought to the forefront absolutely immediately, because it's something that's going to bleed and continue to impact the relationship. And it just can get really, really ugly quick. And I think visibility into each partner's finances is really a tool that can save a lot of headaches and a lot of grief down the road.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee.
I was going to ask if you recommended like joint accounts or separate accounts, because I have so many friends that do it like so many different ways. Like they each have like a fun money account that they contribute to, and then, or they just have one joint account and then they withdraw or whatever it is. And I feel like that's a conversation that a lot of people are having of just like, what is the best system?
It's such a good point, because the thing is with that, Jessica, is that like there isn't a cookie cutter approach I think makes sense for everyone. I think it has to be kind of customized. So I bring it back to business. You know, Ben, you own a lot of businesses and you have partners. What is the first thing you do with a partnership? Because you can't control everyone. You have an operating agreement, right? You have rules that you guys follow and adhere to. And if there's a conflict with an operating agreement, I mean, it could go far as a lawsuit. Now, I'm not suggesting people have an operating agreement with their significant other, but I think there should be rules in place as to, you know, what is acceptable, what's not acceptable. For example, one of my business partners, we have a rule: if you're expensing over $250, we have to get approval from one another. Why don't we have rules like that with our partners? Like, hey, honey, if you're going to, you know, based on our financial situation, if you're going to spend over $300 on a transaction or more than $800 in a week, can we just have a rule that we check in with one another to see if it makes sense so that we're on the same page? And I think that rule should apply. The same way business partnerships are managed are the same way successful relationships and I think marriages work together.
Mm, great advice.
I love that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you mentioned a little bit ago, and Jessica and I, when we first met, Jessica's had a huge year. She started her business. She's doing great. I'm going to retire early because of it. And no, I don't have a plan on retiring. I'm with you, Jason. But one thing that happened was she started this business, had a ton of questions. Her father is very wise and is a great mentor for her. But one of the things that was happening was taxes. her individual taxes, her business taxes. It was confusing. It was disorienting. It was overwhelming. And so it was one of the things that we really sat down together and said, hey, you need to hire a tax professional. Not everybody needs to have a tax professional, but everybody is paying taxes, or at least has to at least record how much they're making each year. Jason, when it comes to taxes, how do you help people navigate it, especially when they're overwhelmed?
Yeah, I mean, the rule of thumb, if you're a 1099 employee, 40%, you have money that's coming in pre-tax, 40%, set up a separate account, 40% instantly gone, right? You land a big deal, 40 grand comes in, 10 grand comes in, $100 comes in, 40%, boom, get it over there. Because what most people don't know, especially when they start the business, is the year after you start, you're going to have quarterly payments. So you're not going to be paying, you know, you're not going to be paying your taxes once a year. It's going to be quarterly. And you have to budget for those taxes. The last place you want to end up is with big fees or, God forbid, in prison, right? I mean, that's a huge issue. We have seen, there are so many reality stars that have had huge tax fraud. Jersey Shore guys, they've put in their time because they didn't know better. Or some of it was naive, some of it was strategic. But it can be a mess and it can get ugly quick. The thing about the tax professional too, Ben, is that these days, there's so many resources. 2021, you can go to H&R Block, and for less than $100, you can have a virtual conversation with a tax consultant. So it's not one of these things that you have to have like the big bucks and spend 20 grand to get a CPA to work through everything. From as little as like $50 to extravagant, like well-known CPAs that are obviously more expensive, maybe $500,000 a month, you can have a professional, and you should. And for me personally, what I use is everything I have is in QuickBooks, and I have a bookkeeper that files every single thing that happens so I can see a report of it daily, weekly, quarterly, because getting behind in taxes can absolutely destroy your wealth worse than credit card debt, and credit card debt is just the ultimate, ultimate bone breaker.
Mm. That's great. Well, all right, this is a little fun thing we want to do. As I said, we had some questions written in. For the last 5 minutes here, if you don't mind, Jason, this is just going to be rhythmatic, and Jessica and I are very intrigued by this segment. We're going to walk through where people, what people should be thinking, men and women, in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s, and then their 50s. We're going to stop at your 50s because a lot of people are going to take different paths when it gets to their 60s. Retirement, maybe not retirement, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But if we can start in your 20s, and let's say this human that we're talking about, is single. They are single and wanting to find a partner. So they're planning for a future family, but they haven't quite found it yet, but they're wanting to start prepping. What should they be thinking? What should they be doing?
I think first and foremost, you got to take care of yourself, right? I think you are what you attract, and especially in your 20s, you're looking for things that are going to be attractive to you in a life partner, and you have to look within yourself to make sure you carry those same characteristics. And one of those is taking care of yourself financially. How so many people in their 20s are financially unsound, so then they're trying to find a partner who is financially sound. They lose leverage in the relationship. They lose leverage in their life, and all of a sudden they're in their 30s. They have that security that they're that gap they're trying to fill, and it just becomes it gets to be a disaster. So first, take care of yourself. And I think if you want to create independence, if you don't want to rely on someone or have to, you know, deal with someone who is weaponizing money, take care of your debt. And if you're in your 20s, that is the number one thing that you should focus on. You don't have to be debt free. You could have a ton of student debt. You have to have a plan to manage your debt, because if you don't do that, the only thing working against you is time when building wealth, and you are delaying the time in which you can compound the money that you have. And there's one thing that anyone should learn: you get rich by making money on your money.
Okay, love that answer. Next segment. Let's say you're 32. You meet a cute little 26-year-old and you're ready to get married. How are you preparing for your marriage in your 30s financially?
In your 30s, preparing for marriage is strictly, in my opinion, and everyone's situation is different, it is just budgeting. You got to budget, it sucks. It's awful. It's painful. It is an absolute son of a, but you have to manage your expenses, because if you're not projecting what's coming down the road, you are going to be in a tough position because there are so many unexpected expenses. If you need a down payment on your house, if you're preparing for the wedding, I know you guys are dealing with that, that gets aggressive quickly. Your child, life insurance, right? You don't have to have life insurance when you're by yourself. You now have a partner that relies on you. You now have kids that rely on you. Life insurance gets expensive. So the big thing is that you have to watch the money that you're spending, and you also have to have a pretty good plan at 32 for what's next. How are you saving for retirement? Do you have your Roth set up? Do you have your 401k set up? Like, your fundamentals in your 30s are really, really important to have ironed out. And if you're a 32-year-old with a 26-year-old, there's a 6-year difference in career time. What happens in 6 years is unbelievable. So the 32-year-old, knock, knock, Betty boy, you have to have direct conversations and understanding. Like, I understand where you are in your career. Where do you project your career? Let's put a business plan together. How can I help you achieve your goals? And what are we doing to make sure that with the risk you're taking in some of your businesses, that you have some type of security blanket in place and a plan to get there?
Okay. 40s. You're 40 years old. You have a family. You are moving forward. You've done all the things that you just said in your 30s. You've set up your Roth. You've set up your savings account. You've set up your investment account. What should somebody be focusing on?
So 40s right there, 20 years from now, 20, 25 years from now is your average year time like horizon of retiring. Now you want to start thinking about what you're going to do to get to that point. So you have the basics set up. You've taken care of your debt. You have a pretty good understanding of what your cash flow is and what your value is to increase that. 40s is where I think your majority of people should start. This is the fun part. This is where it's sexy to start thinking about generational money. It start to think about, can I buy rental properties? What passive income can I have? How can I broaden my investment horizon to do what we already talked about, make more money on my money? What am I doing to start planning for the future and for my kids? College, if you don't have 529 plans up, if you're not thinking about how you're going to be paying for your kids' college or at least helping them out, these are the things that you gotta be thinking of. And you're preparing now. You're within 20-year striking distance of retiring from an average individual. Are you in a position to do so? And if not, what are you doing to accelerate your contribution to your retirement so by 60 you're out in the golf course every day and not worrying about the grind to grind?
Beautiful. All right, hon, you got the final H here.
All right, you're in your 50s. You're an empty nester. Maybe you have some college payments for your kids. Maybe they're working to pay off college themselves. What are you doing with your finances?
50s, man. This is your life. You are living. You are dreaming. Go do whatever the hell you want. No, I think in your 50s, it's a critical time to, I think, probably start thinking to be more risk averse. So in your 40s and your 30s, your risk appetite should be wild. Like, if that suits you, you should be doing left and right. Because why? Time is the only thing working against you with investing. So the more time you have to recover from it, the better off you're going to be. You start getting in your 50s, your window for recovery is getting tight. So this is where you're going to slowly, in my opinion, transition into appropriate risk tolerance so that the wealth that you've built, you can continue to live off it and or you can continue to pass it down. This is the other thing Kevin O'Leary said whenever you're talking. Caitlin and I went on his YouTube channel and he was saying that most people in there, and this is sad, but he's like, the divorce rate is very high because of money. But then if you look deep into those that actually stay together, and this is getting morbid, a big percentage of the reason that people are still staying together in their 50s is because they've created such an unbelievable business plan together that the discomfort of actually breaking the partnership up isn't worth the headache because they're so glued and cemented within their lifestyle and the business they've built as one. And again, sad, but true. And so by the 50s, you and your partner should have a plan for retirement, what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and how you're going to take care of your kids. And you know what? By 60s, your kids are in a good enough position that they're taking you out to eat and they're paying for your
That's right. Yeah, that's good. What are some of these risk adverse investments that, like, can you just name off a couple that you would consider looking into? Maybe if you could just in the final finance question here before our final question of the episode, What are some of the more risky investments that you would look into in your 20s and 30s and 40s? And then what are some of the more risk-averse ones in your 40s and 50s?
For sure. So risk-averse is going to be think about liquidity. Like the least risky you can get is money in a checking account. And do not do that. Have your savings emergency plan. Think about what your fixed expenses are and have that amount saved for whatever you're comfortable with. I would suggest 3 to 9 months. Get that in cash. Don't touch it. Put it in a savings account. That's the least risk averse. That's the most risk averse you'll get. There's no risk. You start moving up, you can get into bonds. Bonds have relatively low risk. Mutual funds. Think about mutual funds. You have groups of lots of stocks that are hedging against each other. There's less risk there. Then when you get dialed into just one stock, the risk associated with that increases drastically. Then you start talking about stocks that have lower market caps, so they're smaller. There's a lot more volatility. That's what the day traders are working with, penny stocks and micro cap and low cap stocks. Then you're talking very high risk. Then you want to get crazy. There's over 10,000 cryptocurrency coins out there in a $1.9 trillion market. You could start dabbling into the crypto space, which is extremely volatile. Volatile like we've never seen before. So the least risk averse, you're talking cash, bonds, mutual funds, commodities. You start to get more risky with individual stocks and equities. Then based on the market cap of those will get even riskier, and you can get absolutely crazy in the crypto world. But probably the highest risk investment at this point is any type of venture capital work or small business investment, because the likelihood of success there is low. But the payout is absolutely massive.
Jason Tardik, you're the man. Jessica's going to send us off here with our final question of every episode. Answer it however you want to in terms of finance, in terms of relationships, in terms of life. But Jessica, you know what to do.
Yeah, really switching gears here. Jason, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? If not, why not?
Interesting. All right. I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and it's the name of the podcast, so I got to feel like a dick for doing this, but maybe I'm misinterpreting.
No. We've had both. Okay. We've had both answers.
Good. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but in my opinion, I think I don't rely on hope as a strategy at all, right? I'm more of a black and white guy, but I've seen it work, right? So Caitlin is the master of hope and the master of manifestation. She sits there and pictures these things happening to her in her life. And I tell her, because to me, if you don't have a black and white strategy as to how you get there, it doesn't happen. And then over and over and over, it happens. And I'm blown away. So I think that you have to understand what works best for you. What works best for me is blueprinting a plan to get there, seeing what game theory. Game theory is what generals had to use to make sure that they could decide what move to make in war, knowing that no matter what decision they made, a certain amount of 1,000 people would die. But it was the only way that they could take emotion out of decision making to get where they had to get, which was victory in war. And I know, again, that is like deep and a little morbid, but I apply game theory to every decision that I make. What are my options? What's the probability of success? And I pursue what makes the most sense. So in my opinion, I think you need a plan, a strategy, and you got to work like hell to get there. But there's always going to be a percentage of luck and hope that will get you to the final finish line. And so that for sure plays. And for anyone that wants to manifest, go talk to Caitlin Bristow, because she's like a borderline genius at making her dreams a reality.
Jason, you're the man. Awesome. Thanks for joining our little series here, Hope Still Wins in Relationships. Couldn't think of anybody better to do this than you to talk about your relationship with Caitlin, but also your relationship with finances and money and how you navigate this process well. I think it's really important. It's been really interesting to us. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we're about to have some really so fun conversations over here. Thanks so much.
Open those checking accounts, get in the weeds. The best app I'll give you, I have no tie to this company at all. So this is a pure endorsement that I have no incentive. Personal Cap. It'll get breakdown every account, does the cash flow for you. Personal Capital. Check it out.
All right, sweet. Going to. Thank you.
You're the man.
See ya.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Hope Still Wins in Relationships. We still have two extra special episodes left in this series. To make sure, you have to make sure you subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts.
Our upcoming guests are very special to Ben and I. You won't want to miss it. I'll give you a little hint. They may know us more than anyone. So thanks for tuning in to today's conversation with Jason. We can't wait to see you next week.
I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and my co-host,
Jess Clark.
Soon to be Higgins. Hey, we'll talk soon.